Hey there, Smashers, and welcome back. Don't forget, you can stream episodes of Smash for free on NBC.com through September 17th. So get on it. Podcast.
Hi, this is Ruth.
And this is Tina.
And welcome to Talkin' Smash,
the podcast where we wear scarves and talk about Smash. Today we are talking about the pilot episode of the show.
Yes. So, first of all, it's been a long time since I've seen this. I am very fond of the Smash logo, how it has the light bulbs within the letters, like an old-timey theater marquee kind of sign.
Yes.
So
the show looks terrific.
It does just look terrific overall, because as people who live in the New York area and so know what New York looks like, mm-hmm. it is such a delight to see a show ostensibly set in New York mm-hmm. be actually set in New York, with like the sidewalks and the grime on the sidewalks and Times Square and the apartments had varying levels of believability, but that's always true. Mm-hmm. But still, we did get some griminess in apartments. Mm-hmm. Oh, and my favorite was the audition, you know, the waiting room hallway for the audition room.
So tiny.
So narrow.
So cramped.
And the bathroom stall that Ivy threw up in.
So tiny.
Yeah.
Also cramped.
So cramped. Yes.
Cracked tile and all that.
Yes. So.
So let's just do some little background info on the episode. It aired February 6th, 2012. It was directed by Michael Mayer, who is the Tony Award-winning director of Spring Awakening. And all the original music for the show within a show of Smash is composed by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, who are most famous for Hairspray, but have also worked on a gajillion film scores and many other Broadway credits. And the episode is written by the show creator, Teresa Rebick.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'd say, like, we're really starting off on a high note here. Like, I enjoyed even the opening, how we start off in this kind of fantasy, and mm-hmm. what a great song to start with, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, reality comes with a rude awakening of a cell phone ringing. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, where we're in the audition room with someone taking a call in the middle of her heartfelt performance, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought that was a very nice little dose of fantasy and then realism.
Absolutely.
And another thing, that this is in New York, you see lots of like just fun New York actor faces in the show. Like the director, the one who took the cell phone call is, I was looking up her name before, but she's like a very long-standing, like stand-up comedian and off-Broadway performer who's had a ton of one-woman shows, and you know she's got a great face. And her name is Kate Clinton.
Oh, yes. I recognize that name.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And a fun fact is that Catherine McPhee sang "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" on American Idol.
Oh. There we go.
Yes.
And I loved, so we have Karen and her audition, and then I love the introduction of Ivy.
Ivy just
comes in. Ba-boom. You know, she knows. Mm-hmm. This is clearly her millionth audition, and she is a pro, and she's got this down. Like, oh, I'm just going to bend over and get my music.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my butt. Here are my boobs.
Yes.
What song do you want?
Yes. Yeah. Karen and Ivy are immediately contrasted.
Yes.
Corn-fed Iowa versus New York City vivacious.
Yes. And it's funny. We start off with that and then we end with the two of them.
Yes.
So I think they did an excellent job of kind of setting up like, okay, here are dueling heroines.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that was all great. And then we see Julia,
Deborah Messing's
character, and we get the first scarf right off the bat.
I cannot emphasize to our many listeners out there that scarves play an enormous, enormous part in Smash. It Deborah Messing's character, in fact, some of the early Smash Lash to the show involved just how many scarves Deborah Messing's character Julia wears in a single episode, let alone the entire show.
I love it.
I kept count.
I counted four scarves.
Oh, I counted six scarves on Julia, and then an additional...
Well, I counted one scarf on Derek, and then four scarves on Julia.
Oh, I counted six Julia scarves and four non-Julia scarves.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to review my scarf count. But yes, and the first one we start off is like, it's like giant and chunky, and it's got like giant holes in it. Her aesthetic, Julia's aesthetic, is very like Olsen twins, I feel.
I love her aesthetic. I love Julia's clothes.
I love her giant sweaters.
Comfortable.
Yes.
They look, I had a theater teacher in college who was just drapey, just long fabric, comfortable. You felt like you could move in it. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I personally love Julia's style on the show.
Yes, I love it as well. And then we get to meet, oh my goodness.
Tom Christian Borley's character?
Yeah, yes, Tom Christian Borley's character. And oh, Tom's assistant, the Eve Harrington.
Yes! I also wrote that down, that Ellis is definitely an All About Eve type character.
You got the book on the table, and we kind of just get to things right away. Marilyn, I think she'd make a great musical. And I love, like, the running theme through the episode of we could do a baseball number.
Yes!
I don't know if that's, like, a thing in the musical theater world that everyone wants to do a baseball.
I don't know.
But I love it as a thing within the episode.
It is fun. I also... I, in general, very much enjoy movies about baseball. I like the sport of baseball.
I enjoy movies about baseball.
Movies about baseball are wonderful.
Yes.
And I noted later on in the episode, we learn officially that Karen is indeed from Iowa. And I have decided that this is officially a Field of Dreams reference because Field of Dreams takes place in Iowa. It's a movie about baseball. They talk about baseball throughout the episode. I'm going to count it.
Okay. And then I immediately start to think of Karen as a whiny baby
when yes, yes.
She's talking to her boyfriend, Dev. And she's like, why do I have to be sexy all the time?
Oh.
And yeah. Oh, and the light thing. When she's like, they said kept saying I was light. I don't know what that means. If you don't know what it means, why don't you ask your agent?
She has
someone.
An agent.
Yes, she has an agent.
Yes.
So why wouldn't you ask your agent, like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So already I'm starting to dislike Karen,
mm-hmm.
our sweet, wonderful protagonist. Oh, then we get to go home with Julia.
Julia's marriage is a mess, and I think they let us into that immediately. I find her husband completely unsupportive of her very successful career as mm-hmm. a playwright, book writer, you know, lyricist. Julia's husband, incidentally, is played by Brian Darcy James. And her and her husband, Leo, are...
her son?
Leo is the son. What is the husband's name?
I don't know, husband.
Husbands. But they have a son, Leo, who is of indeterminate age. He has jazz band after school sometimes, but he also looks like he's 32. But he is also a whiny baby.
He is another whiny... Well, he doesn't get to be a whiny... He's not a whiny baby in this episode.
Yet.
But it's funny. As soon as he came on to the screen, like, I could just... Like, his whole subtext all the time is like, Leo, I'm a high school student. I'm Leo. I'm a high school student. And I do agree the actor... Well, this is the thing. Sometimes people can look high school age to some people and not others.
That's true.
Liza Weil in Gilmore Girls is a very good example of this.
Liza Weil has been the same age for 20 years, I think.
Yeah. Well, so she played like someone in their early 20s on The West Wing.
That's right. She was a college student before she was a high school student.
Yeah. I think she might have even been a college grad before.
Ooh,
she. And
possibly.
She also played like a nurse on an episode of Law & Order SVU, I think, before Gilmore Girls, where she was like 30. So, and my mother, you know, whenever Gilmore Girls would be on and Liza Weil would be on the screen, would be like, I can't believe she's a high school student. That's ridiculous. And I always accepted Liza Weil as Paris Geller, a high school student, like without like really giving it much thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if to some people, that actor whose name is Emery Cohen.
Emery Cohen is no Liza Weil, though.
You see, this is Sarah Paulson syndrome because you hate him because of this character. It's possible you hate him because of this character. He was also in Brooklyn recently.
Okay.
With, what is that, 2 years ago? And he was very good in Brooklyn and very appealing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Oh, and he was also in this Netflix series called The OA, I believe. And I enjoyed him in that as well. So you might just hate Leo.
I might. Oh, I noted, because apparently this adoption is very, very fraught because...
no one can work when you're...
No one can work when you're going through an adoption, because what adoption agencies really like to see is no income coming into a household.
Yes.
I also like that Julia's husband, he says something, do you know how hard it is to adopt? They certainly don't let anybody adopt.
Well, all I thought of when he said that was Woody Allen. I got to adopt children after he was... Yeah.
Ew, that's right.
Yeah.
He's disgusting.
But, I guess adoption can be hard even if you are rich, but,
Yeah.
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 We're shrugging.
I noticed a theme in this episode, too, is unsupportive families.
Yes. Well, I like that Frank the husband. Frank the husband. Mm-hmm. So, well, on one hand, it's kind of usually the female role in terms of, in most things, like there's usually the nagging wife being like, I don't care that you're saving the world. You missed Jimmy's soccer practice. La, la, la. So.
Oh, that's funny. I guess I think of it the reverse, there's a trope of passionate, dedicated women being told that they're neglecting their families. Like, I think of Erin Brockovich.
Yes. Is
an example that always comes to mind, that when men sacrifice for, you know, their career, their passion, the world, it's seen as noble. And with women, especially if there's a family involved, that they're neglecting their household duties.
So I guess we could look at it as like glasses half full or glasses half empty.
Yeah.
In terms of, isn't it great that there's a nagging husband instead of a nagging wife? Or isn't it terrible that a woman can't have a career without her partner being like, you're neglecting me simply by having a career?
I think the thing we can definitely agree on is the show makes clear that a life in the theater is a hard life and it's hard to have it all.
Yes, it's tough to have it all.
I enjoy the fake YouTube.
Yes.
Which is you lens.
Yes, I enjoy that as well. I also enjoy the little snippet we see backstage of
Heaven Can Wait. Is that the...
Heaven on Earth.
Heaven on Earth. Heaven Can Wait is that movie.
Yes. The little snippet we see from backstage of the Heaven on Earth musical
this
number.
This is Tom and Julia's long-running hit musical.
Yes. Because I think that's one of the joys of having a show within a show is you can have musical numbers without having to justify their existence.
Yes. Oh, it's
in terms
so
of the plot,
great.
You could just have a random number about anything.
I love it so
and
much.
And I do enjoy just the Heaven on Earth with, we've got so many sparkles and sequins and scantily clad people of both genders, and it's a delight.
It is. And we establish that Ivy is like a working chorus girl.
Yes. Yes, and we get to see like the chorus girl dressing room, which still might be on the large side for versus reality. But yeah, we get the idea of like the cramped quarters.
I really enjoyed the dig at Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark.
Yes, and I enjoy how like both Tom and Julia just immediately go into full freak out mode about the bloggers,
theater bloggers.
Yeah.
And yes, and the YouTube or U-Lens commenters on musical theater performances are notoriously like scathing. People definitely have opinions about professional actors doing their job.
Yes. Oh, and I think we're past this, but the dinner scene with Karen and her parents, again, you know, kind of we're just establishing stuff, exposition, Iowa, etc. But I enjoy that her parents are played by Dylan and Becky Baker.
Yes, real-life married couple.
Real-life
actors.
Married character actors.
Yes, they are both, hey, it's that person.
Yes.
And, we're getting up to the part where somebody, I think this is when Julia and Frank are talking about Marilyn, the musical, and Frank is the one who says, it'll be a smash, and that's the name of the show.
That was our first use of smash.
Oh, so the conniving assistant, Ellis, what happens is he leaks this private, what would you call it? It's a YouTube video that Julia and Tom make with Ivy singing a song from this idea they have for a Marilyn musical. And Ellis puts it on YouTube without their permission. And we see Karen learning the lyrics to it already. She's fallen in love with it. I wrote down, this is not your role, Karen Cartwright. but we can see that this is a show that people are already falling in love with.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Ellis gets fired, justifiably. But, oh, before that, we meet Angelica Houston.
Angelica Houston. She comes in. She's great. She has all the presence. She has all the charisma. She's going through a bitter, bitter, ugly divorce. Her husband is played by Michael Christopher. Michael Christopher, who is he has a lot of awards. He's a playwright and an actor, and he has Pulitzer. So, yes, he plays her husband, Jerry Rand, which is a great producer name.
Yes, Jerry and Eileen Rand are both great producer names. And I enjoy their badinage, their combat from the get-go,
mm-hmm.
when they're sitting across the table with their lawyers, and it gets better from here.
And Eileen cares. Oh, and Jerry's lawyer is played by Patti LuPone's brother. And yes, so Eileen has been working on a My Fair Lady musical for 3 years, and Jerry is trying to use that as a bargaining chip to, I think the subtext is to get her to settle for a really bad deal in the divorce.
Mm-hmm. And I think also this is like very nice in terms of we're establishing a little bit of reality in terms of how long it takes in general to develop a musical.
Point.
So My Fair Lady, which is already a musical that's been written, mm-hmm. has been in development for 3 years. So we're getting a sense, even though we're going to quickly leave this realm of reality, of how long, you know, and kind of circuitous the path can be for a show to come to Broadway.
Yes.
Yes, and then, and Eileen's office, I know when she's meeting with Julia and Tom for the first time, mm-hmm. I enjoyed that office quite a bit. I love her leather couch. And I love that, again, they do acknowledge, everyone's going to say it's too soon for us to do a workshop of this, but I say, who cares? So we're kind of nodding in the direction of like, yes, things are moving at warp speed and that typically wouldn't happen, but just go with it, fellas.
Mm-hmm.
Just go with it, everybody.
And Julia's nervous about working with Eileen, even though they love her. They clearly have like a great working relationship with her, but there's this word on the street that Eileen isn't good business right now because she's going through this divorce. And
I think that's also
production
great
companies
kind of,
or escrow and things like that.
I think that's also great kind of realism that everyone in the biz knows this,
mm-hmm.
knows
it's a small
about their
world.
Fraught divorce and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this is a very small insular mm-hmm. world that we're dealing with.
I noticed that around this time, I think this is when Ellis begs for his job back from Tom.
Oh, that was
Julia.
Classic Eve Harrington.
It absolutely is. And if you haven't seen All About Eve, you very much should. It's also one of Marilyn Monroe's early film appearances. But I also noticed that Ellis is wearing a tie that appears to be crocheted. And I question if that should be counted as a scarf.
All right, we'll count it as a scarf.
Yeah.
Well, we should count it. Yeah, it's...
It's scarf adjacent.
It's scarf adjacent, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like where he says that whole thing of like, I saw a three on a match or whatever. Like Eve Harrington has that whole speech at the very early mm-hmm. on of like, I saw Margot Channing in whatever the show was.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore life was all right, even though my soldier husband had just died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he is definitely.
Watch All About Eve, everybody. It's
please
great.
Please do. We will probably reference it more than once or twice.
Yes.
And... Yes, no, Ellis is definitely manipulative, and he has quickly learned how to play Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, we've also established, too, at this point in the show, that Tom is a flirt. Tom is gay and flirts with chorus boys, and there's a quick establishing sentence that Tom gets around enough that he doesn't even remember the names of people that he's been with.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us into the most problematic character in the entire show, which is Derek Wills, who is apparently an artistic genius.
Well, I love that we start planting the seeds very early of Derek, he's a genius, Derek, he's a genius. And then kind of midway through, we finally meet Derek.
Mm-hmm. He comes with a reputation. We know that Christian Borel's character, Tom, hates him, has had some sort of a terrible experience with him in the past, and does not want him to be involved in their Marilyn musical. But Julia and Eileen are in love with Derek's work. They, as we're going to keep saying, think of him as an artistic genius and just think, well, let's get him in the room with these songs and let's see what he can do.
And I will say, like, we'll get more into the scene with Karen later, but I do think his portrayal of an arrogant, brilliant theater director, mm-hmm. it's pretty spot on in terms of, you know, he's someone who's charismatic, but also kind of very cold and rude, mm-hmm. unless you are at a certain level in the stratosphere with him. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the one thing is I do not buy him as a choreographer. And that is just,
yeah,
it's hard for someone who is not a dancer to all of a sudden move like a dancer.
Yes. And they avoid having him move as much as possible,
yes,
in rehearsal studios. But even, yes, he just doesn't have that fluid dancer body that is as expressive as all the dancers that are,
yeah,
around him.
But I do see, like, even in that, we get our first musical number, the baseball number in, yes, the studio. And we, you know,
the
we establish
pastime.
Yes, and we establish, like, the switching between the studio and then the fantasy version.
It's really great. Is this post-Glee? Are we in a post-Glee world?
I don't think so. I think we're in a pre-Glee world.
Ooh, interesting.
We should check on that.
Yeah.
Should we check on it now or?
We can check on it later.
Okay.
I'm sure Glee will come up at some point too. But we're definitely in a post-Chicago world. Chicago,
yes,
the movie musical based on, of course, Chicago.
I'm so bad at time. We're most likely in a post-Chicago
world. We are, because, okay, Chicago, like, changed the entire scene. After Chicago, we started getting more and more movie musicals, and it set the stage for all these, like, musical TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago was partly so successful because in the opening shot, we learn that the musical sequences are happening in Roxy's mind, in Renee Zellweger's mind, and it really taught audiences to suspend disbelief about going back and forth between reality, you know, a prison, and then these luxe, luxurious, you know, fully costumed, fully choreographed Broadway numbers. So the audience is primed for a show like Smash. Because of that, they can switch back and forth.
This is a segue. But anytime I'm holding a knife and Simon is in the kitchen, I say in my head, he ran into my knife. He ran into my knife 9 times. I forget what the number is. But
I think it's 10.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
Chicago,
I love
reference.
It. See, yeah. Chicago. Do-do-do-do. I have to say one thing is that I'm surprised that so many people even thought that Marilyn would be a hard person to make a musical about, given that she did so many movies. She sang so many songs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think everything sounds simultaneously like a terrible idea for a musical and a great idea for a musical until, mm-hmm, it succeeds or fails.
That's true.
So, for instance, Ever After, the Drew Barrymore movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something I learned from Wikipedia today, that at one point they planned to make that a musical, and Teresa Rebeck was actually the book writer for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all fell apart somewhere along the way in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But potentially I imagine that was part of the seeds that led her to the creation of Smash. But, and Ever After, like, I could see that as a good musical.
Absolutely.
I don't know why who knows why, you know, it fell apart, but.
Mm-hmm. It's a class. I mean, it's literally a Cinderella story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed that in an early line that we get in regards to Derek actually says he's resistant about doing the musical because him and Tom don't work well together. And he says that Marilyn would have to
blow him
to make him do this show. And that's definitely some, you know, foreshadowing about this character and his.
I will say, like, if we're just looking at the pilot, I think this really is, it's, it's more realistic than I remembered in terms of portraying like the sexual harassment and kind of like the situations you can get into like as an actor or actress because of the power dynamics that are in play. But yeah, so, you know, so yeah, yes. Kudos Teresa Rebeck for kind of writing a very realistic.
It is.
It's smarmy.
It's a tight script. It really is.
Yes.
There are lots of seeds planted here.
Yeah.
So
now we get into some stuff. There are a couple things that, again, this is the picking of nits, but that's what we're here for. Well, there's one thing. First of all, Dev, why is Dev an expert on Marilyn Monroe? And why is Karen taking acting coaching from her political consultant boyfriend?
I don't know. I think if we're going to examine the text that Teresa Rebeck has provided, I think that Dev has a lot of sway over Karen. His opinion really, really matters to her. Karen isn't great at defending her life choices to her parents, but so Dev sort of advocates really does like to come in and
save the day a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she lets him. Mm-hmm. It's not a great dynamic that they have in their relationship. It is a little imbalanced.
It is. Yeah. We haven't seen any inspiring romantic relationships yet.
We really haven't. And the actor who plays Dev.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
He's great. He's so handsome. So charming. Handsome,
such a fun accent, you know, and I want to like his character, but I really don't right now. And when he's like, we have to find something that accentuates your breasts.
I spit laughing.
Oh my goodness. Oh, and then we have the Marilyn audition.
Before we go forward, I have to say that he says breasts repeatedly.
He does say breasts. See how she leads with her breasts.
Can you do that?
Yes. So we get to hear Dev say breasts repeatedly.
Yes, it's uncomfortable.
I don't know. Have you ever, as part of your acting process,
led with my breasts?
Well, presumably we've all led with our breasts as part of our acting process at one point. But like, reenacted a movie scene with your significant other.
I did meet my husband during the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
So maybe yes.
I literally have spent thousands of hours recreating scenes from a movie. So I'm probably not the best person to ask.
But yeah, it's an interesting method Karen has of preparing for an audition.
Yes, but I do remember though in theater school asking about whether, you know, the thought process behind learning everything you can about a real life person that you're being asked to portray, or ignoring outside information and just looking at what information the writer has provided for you. And you really can go either way. And I don't, because I think about Erin Brockovich a lot, but I remember that Julia Roberts practically had Erin Brockovich move in with her. Like, she studied every little thing about her that she could. Meanwhile, Albert Finney, who plays Erin Brockovich's boss, didn't even meet the guy.
Yeah. Well, that's because I think the Brits and, you know, the Brits, the Irish, etc., they have a very different approach to acting than the Americans in terms of I think they look at it much more as a trade than as like this grand art.
Gotcha.
This is my feeling. Like, to them, it's their trade, and this is why, and it's their trade, and it's their craft, and they practice it, and they've got their, you know, their skill set, and they've worked on their voice and whatever. But I think they take it all a little less seriously. than the Americans, I think, for the most part.
That's interesting. Before we get too far ahead, we do get to see Derek's sort of sample/audition scene where he presents National Pastime for the our writers and Eileen, so we can see sort of what his direction would be were he to be chosen. Does this happen, first of all? Do directors audition For the writers?
Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know that. But I will say, like, I really enjoyed the rehearsal studio and that space. And I always love seeing, like, the work in progress thing. Mm-hmm. So I really, like, for me, like, watching, like, the rehearsal version versus the fantasy version, I prefer the rehearsal version. Though I do like that they have sequins on their baseball uniforms.
I love it. I wrote Ivy would smash. She's delightful. She's delicious.
Yeah. So, and I think that was a really great, like, first musical number for the show to hit us with.
Also, Julia wears a dress that is basically a scarf. It is, it's a handkerchief dress, but it's not exactly a dress. It's either a very, it's either a tunic or a jacket or...
I think most of Julia's clothes could probably just fall under the general heading of tunic. Yes. I think that's a really good word for, to, you know, encapsulate her style.
I love it.
It's tunics and scarves.
She could nap anywhere. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. I also wonder who's paying for this, because all of Eileen's assets are tied up in escrow. And
that's a very good point. I mean, rehearsal space is not free, and certainly not that gorgeous rehearsal space. And well, apparently, I guess Ivy and all the chorus boys are working for free.
I wonder, I didn't notice if the chorus boys are the chorus boys from heaven on earth, because maybe they are exploiting free labor from, because they're all in a Broadway show together.
We should call Equity.
We should call Equity. Them
that this fictional show from 6 years ago is violating Equity rules. Some of the chorus boys become recurring chorus boys. Mm. And also the dance captain that they had kind of, you know, lurking in the background.
Yes.
You know, becomes our regular dance captain.
Oh, excellent.
As the show comes on, I believe.
So going back to the Dev Karen breasts scene, I think
this is the thing. Mm-hmm. I love that Dev is teaching her to be a woman.
Yes. It's very patronizing.
It's a little gross.
It's very creepy. It's wonderful to see a person of color in a speaking role on television. You know, that's fantastic. But yes, the character's creepy. Yeah. Like, he's charming creepy, as opposed to...
Ellis, who's just creepy creepy.
Oh, and what's-his-face, Derek, who's creepy charming.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Dev is charming creepy, and Derek is creepy charming.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I also see a parallel between Snatch and Black Swan, because we have the, you're perfect for the part, but you can't do sex. You can do sex, but are you perfect for the part? So Karen and Ivy are different sides of the same coin. Mm. Together, they're the perfect Marilyn.
Mm. Maybe they should kiss.
They should.
And then everything would be better.
That would be perfect.
Yeah.
And we finally see Karen and Ivy in the same scene here on the way to the callback. We've just sped right along, right? We're in callbacks.
Well, first of all, we missed. We haven't talked about the first audition.
I'm so sorry.
And this is one of the bones I have to pick. The pilot, I think they do a really good job of kind of setting up the world and, like, having these little splashes of reality throughout the world. But then, this I have a bone to pick. Like, for actors do not show up in costume.
No.
Professional actors do not show up in costume for auditions.
No.
So the fact that there was not one, but, like, three girls there in, like, in the Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, full regalia.
Yeah, it's like full-on Marilyn cosplay is happening here, where we have, like, the blonde curled bob wigs. We have, you know, cotton candy pink dresses.
And
you know.
I get that it's shorthand to be like, oh, these guys, they're not it. Mm-hmm. But it was too much shorthand for me. I'm like, no. Oh, and this, you know, this is one of those spot the Broadway actor moments too. The Marilyn that we see audition in the full regalia is Annalee Ashford, who is, you know, a delightful Broadway presence who was Tony nominated for something. I forget.
Yes. But she's in lots of things.
She's in lots of things.
And it's believable that her and Ivy Lynn would be up for the same part.
Yes, because I imagine she and Megan Hilty in real life have been up for many of the same parts.
Absolutely. And that's a thing that non-actors may not know is when you're in those hallways, and Ruth and I have both experienced this, how often you walk into a hallway and you encounter 20 people who look exactly like you.
Yeah. And you start to become buddies with them, you mm-hmm. know, because a lot of times, like, you see them over and over again yep. of like, oh, hey, it's you.
Yep.
We played the same parts. How you doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the hallway itself gets A+ mm-hmm. for its cramped narrowness, very realistic, but the full costume, what Ivy wore is perfect mm-hmm. and what everyone would wear to mm-hmm. that audition, in terms of you want to not be in costume, but you want to dress like you want to kind of give a nod.
A suggestion.
Because you want to the character.
When you're auditioning, you want the director to be able to picture you as the part.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to go in, you don't want to run the risk of competing with the image that the director has in their mind, but you want sort of something that the director can plug in to their vision of mm-hmm. what the character would be. So, you know, going in with something that resembles period clothing is helpful, but like not a full-on...
No wigs.
Costume.
No wigs. Yeah. No satin dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, and then Karen comes in and is such a breath of fresh air.
Yes, she's just wearing regular street clothes. They are basically, it's just regular clothes.
Which, again, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And I could see having, like, you know, she's having a fuck it moment and, like, I'm just going to go in and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, she's just making the rounds. It's probably her 10th audition of the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Karen, you know, does have her day job as a waitress. So, you know, she could have just come from work. But they are wowed by Karen.
Well, and this was very distracting to me, in terms of she starts singing I Am Beautiful.
Yes, the Christina Aguilera song.
Great song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would be an appropriate audition piece.
I just don't think so.
Yeah. But the thing that I think was most distracting about it is when she starts singing, like we don't even segue into it. We immediately go into like this full on like orchestral thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also like her singing in this song is taking place in a different sonic universe.
Yes.
Than the rest of the music in the show, in terms of like, I don't know if it's auto-tune or what it is, mm-hmm. but it sounds like it's a pop song on the radio.
It does. It absolutely does.
As opposed to the musical number or the other singing, which again is all like certainly not, you know, recorded as it sounded in the room,
mm-hmm.
but they are all the rest of the songs are existing on a somewhat more, mm-hmm. you know, a plane of less autotune, more actual voice sound. it was very distracting.
Yes, the Karen's audition does not work for me as a show-stopping audition number. And Karen's audition, we're really left only with the other actors' reactions to her piece that tells you this was a great number. This
yes.
was like she, because I don't feel wowed. I mean, Catherine McPhee has a lovely voice. Again, I voted for her repeatedly on American Idol. And I think she's a good actress. But it doesn't work. It's not a believable audition song. And it does. Like you said, it's so great. You can hear the soundboard.
So this is interesting. So I wonder, like, after they shot the pilot mm-hmm. and they're in the editing room mm-hmm. or whatever, and they're putting this together, do you think anyone in that room had that same feeling in terms of this just doesn't seem like it would be the thing that would make all these people sit up and take notice
mm-hmm.
in this universe that we are building?
I don't know. I mean, the literal lyrics of the Linda Perry penned Christina Aguilera mega hit Beautiful do sort of allude to this inner monologue that Marilyn could be having about fame not being all that it is, and wanting to be loved and needing
also
affirmation.
Also, when I think Marilyn Monroe, I don't think empowerment ballad.
No. But I guess it's edgy. like Karen's leather jacket. But I know we're nowhere near that point at all. I'm so sorry, but the show already is telling us repeatedly that there's something different about Karen.
She's got something special.
She's green, but she's worth taking a risk on. And there's a lot of telling but not showing with Karen at this point.
I wonder if this is a moment where Game of Thrones, they shot the pilot.
Okay.
Someone else was Daenerys Targaryen. Mm-hmm. They looked at the pilot afterwards and were like, nope, we got to change this. Mm. They went out and recast and got Emilia Clarke. I wonder if they had not done that, would we be doing a podcast about the two-season phenomenon of the flawed Game of Thrones?
Interesting. Hmm.
And what if, I wonder, like, what would have happened if they had decided, like, you know what, we made an oopsie here. Mm-hmm. We're going to recast this and maybe get, like, a second actual Broadway person.
A second actual Broadway person definitely would have been interesting. I think part of what the show is already telling us in the pilot is that even though she miraculously has an agent already, Karen isn't Broadway. She's different. She's not New York. She's not, I mean, you know, obviously Marilyn is synonymous with Hollywood, but, you know, New York, the other culture mecca, mm-hmm. theater as opposed to film, and Ivy screams musical theater.
Yeah.
Everything about
Ivy
it.
She's is polished. Of this world.
And
yes.
Ivy tells us in the pilot that she's trained, and Karen is 24, has an agent, but somehow I think the only thing she's ever done is high school theater. So I don't know. There's a lot of mystery about what Karen's been doing high school.
But yeah, I guess that is the thing. Like, they're trying to establish Karen as, like, the outsider, something new. But she's the outsider and something new. But, like, allegedly, like, this is the business that she wants to be in. Mm-hmm. And
I wonder would it be more believable if they had had, like, an open call for Marilyn, within the show of Smash, if there had been like a publicity thing, like, come audition for Marilyn, we're looking for a fresh new face, and they found Karen that way.
Yeah, or like, what if like she wanted to be in show business but not musical theater? Like, what if she was trying to be a pop singer or something? Mm-hmm. That might have been, because mm-hmm. she is more realistic as a pop singer than a Broadway performer.
She is, yes, that is what she sounds like.
Yeah, so what if she had been trying to make it as a pop star, and then again, yes, for whatever, mm-hmm. you know, plot reasons, she ended up going to this audition. And she could have maybe had an agent for, I don't know, somehow already, mm-hmm. for doing commercial jingles or something.
You know, that absolutely would have been interesting. Mm-hmm. But she's very, very green for somebody who already has an agent, is getting auditions for
and presumably has been in New York for, let's say, 2 years?
Yeah, I think they establish it. I remember from years ago that they establish, like, down to the month, like, how long Karen has been in New York.
Well, let's say at least 2 years, because let's say 22, she graduates college and she mm-hmm. moves straight away to New York because this is her dream. She mm-hmm. said it a couple times, mm-hmm. you know, New York theater, Broadway, et cetera, is her dream. Mm-hmm. So she's been here 2 years. She's met Dev, and their relationship has progressed to the point where they're living together.
Yeah.
And her parents have obviously met him several times mm-hmm. before.
Yeah, because we see them at dinner, and they already know him.
So I do like when her mom mouths, marry him. Yeah. So she's been here a while, and yet she's still so dumb.
Yes, she is not good at the auditioning for the musicals.
But she has an agent who is sending her to these auditions. Yeah, and so
at some point, wouldn't her agent get a phone call from a casting director saying, could you please stop sending her to sing pop songs for us. It's just not appropriate.
Well, let's assume that this is the very first time she's
this is the biggest
chosen.
Audition she's ever had.
Yeah, and she's gone rogue.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ivy and Karen both have callbacks.
Yeah, so we get to see them kind of side-by-side comparison, more or less. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess we get to see something in both of their Marilyns.
Yes, and Julie and Tom really do want, if it was up to Julie and Tom, they would just, Ivy would just be Marilyn, and they'd be already working on the next stage of the production. Mm-hmm. They love her. They have a relationship with her. She's a chorus girl in their show, and she did their You Lens video. And she looks like Marilyn.
Yeah.
And she's got a beautiful voice. And I get goosebumps when Megan Hilty sings because she's got just this gorgeous, resonant voice. And she
can belch. You haven't really heard her belch yet.
Like a dream. And oh, she just hits certain notes and the hairs on my arm go up.
So then we get to the scene, the trigger warning in all caps scene where...
I hate him.
Yeah. Okay. Derek calls... What's her name? Karen.
Yes.
Derek calls Karen late at night, 10 p.m.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. Yeah, 10
and
o'clock.
Tells her, I guess, to come over to his apartment. Mm-hmm. And she immediately does. And this is where I remember in 2012 watching this, kind of just like shouting at the screen, like, Karen, you're so dumb. Though now in 2018, I could be a little more, you know, nuanced with that and say, like, Karen, you are dumb, but I understand, you know, it's your career and whatever, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And she goes into his apartment, and this is the most distracting apartment of the episode.
It's
it might
massive.
Be the most distracting apartment of the entire series.
It's bigger than Jerry and Eileen's lawyer's offices, like suites.
Yeah. And so we've established that Derek is a musical theater director because mm-hmm. apparently he choreographs as well as directs.
Yes.
Even though he never danced somehow. But so musical, I don't think Steven Spielberg might not be able to afford that apartment.
It's huge. It's got a view. It's like
and
old
also,
glass windows.
And also the staircase just gives me anxiety. That floating staircase with no railing on either side. Every time I see it, I get so anxious. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the episode, he just skips right down it like a little deer. And I mean, kudos to him. But yeah, mm-hmm. The staircase worries me.
So, yep, he invites Karen over to sexually harass her, and it's...
But I have to say, like, he does a very, very good, plausible job at creating this environment in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, mixing in just enough, like... Mm-hmm.
You've got it, kid. I just need to see the sex side of Marilyn Moore, and...
Yes, and, like, I'm...
Help me to help you.
Yes, help me to help you, and... Yeah, so he really does mix enough, mm-hmm. like, professionalism-ishness talk mm-hmm. in with it, where you're like, yeah, I can see how this would happen.
And he's scary, too.
Yes.
And even though he's not a particularly large human being, he has – there's anger and there's venom in how he talks to Karen, and he's intimidating. He's very intimidating, and he's basically asking – Karen to have sex with him or to show him how much like Marilyn she can be.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. And, you know, Karen goes into his bathroom and throws on a white button-down shirt and comes out and does sort of like a little sexy happy birthday, Mr. President. But then pointedly tells him that she's not going to sleep with him.
And then this piques his interest even. This is where we enter the realm of fiction, mm-hmm. Where he respects her more now and she's piqued his interest even more because she's turned him down. Yeah, but also, like, I don't know if she would have gotten out. Well, if he was Harvey Weinstein, we know she would not have gotten out of his apartment. But, like, even the character that Derek is playing in terms, like, would she have gotten out of Derek's apartment without him touching her or grabbing her?
I don't know. I get, I get the sense that this is not the first time Derek has done it.
No.
This move, because it's so, it seems practiced.
Yeah. But maybe, I guess maybe this is Derek's own personal code of conduct in terms of, I will lay the groundwork. I will say the provocative things in terms of, you know, Marilyn would do this or whatever, but I won't actually physically.
Yes. And there are, as we know, there are lots of guys like that who, if they don't put a gun to the woman's head, it's not rape.
Yes. So, okay. So Derek is in that category of like, I'm still a good guy because I haven't like physically like restrained anyone.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And then we move
on. The callback, right?
Let Me Be Your Star.
Let Me Be Your Star is so good. It's such a good song. It was so smart for them to have a set composing team.
Yes.
Throughout the show.
So that the show within a show could actually have
it's cohesive.
Yes.
The baseball number and Let Me Be Your Star sound like they're from the same show.
Yes. And I love the way this is shot of we see them both getting ready and we keep cutting back and forth. And then one singing it, the other singing it. I love Ivy's little pink headphones that she has on with her outfit.
So cute.
And then we have them both singing as they're progressing to the audition.
Karen's outfit is adorable. I am fairly certain I had this outfit in the 90s. She's wearing like a white dress that's got little cherries on it. Symbolism for Karen, and up her black leather jacket, and she just looks so cute. It's so terrific.
And I know I said like actors would not dress in costume. Mm-hmm. Ivy does get pretty close to costume.
She gets very close. She's basically wearing the 7-year itch iconic white halter dress that famously blows up on the New York City
and a white
sidewalk.
Fur stole
and a white fur stole, and her hair is very poofed out and Marilyn. But she also looks terrific.
Yes. And yes, and then we see them side by side singing, and
they harmonize.
Yes. And then that's it.
Then credits.
Then credits roll. So, I mean, on the whole, I think back in the day, on the whole, I'd give the pilot an A-.
Oh, I remember we go to the title screen. And I just went, this is a great show. I love it. I love it. I remember being hooked immediately.
I was definitely hooked. You know, again, it's a backstage story. Mm-hmm. And they set up the world really well. And some of the characters are not fully fleshed out, such as Frank the husband.
Yes.
And Ellis is basically just Eve Arrington. So at this point, that's fine.
Yes.
But, you know, there are some characters that really do feel three-dimensional. Derek, for all of his skeeviness, feels very three-dimensional.
He's very three-dimensional.
Eileen, you know,
even
Tom and
Jerry.
Julia. Jerry, I love Jerry.
Jerry's great.
Yes.
Yes, this like evil, soon-to-be ex-husband.
Because he's so just unapologetically like, you know, I'm a jerk and I accept that about myself.
And it's a really nice piece of conflict to have in the back pocket.
Yeah. And you really do get the sense that they are a couple who were married for like 20, 30 years. And you really do feel like this history with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely looked forward to seeing more of their conflict.
Mm-hmm. Angelica Houston's wonderful. You very quickly, just in the way she delivers her lines, it's clear that this marriage meant something to Eileen, that this is upsetting for her, but she's also a businesswoman and she's competent and she is not going to fall to pieces over this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though her husband's a scoundrel who cheated on her.
He is a scoundrel. He's a scoundrel and a scamp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But and then just the world and like these snippets of all these different rehearsal rooms and audition rooms and the people populating them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the little bit of backstage at our big Broadway show, Heaven on Earth. It was all great. I was very excited to see episode 2.
I think we smashed it.
We smashed it. Smash cut. You can follow us on social media at
Talkin' Smash.
With no G because we're rebels and it was taken. Or talking.
We're from Jersey and we don't pronounce our G's anyway.
That is also true. Or you can follow me at YellowFairy19. That's Yellow_Fairy19.
And I'm at NiceWhiteLady. That's Nice_White_Lady. And our website is Talkin' Smash. Again, no G.
Yay, New Jersey.
give me